Welcome to Out in the Bay Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beal, and this week, Out in the Bay is going punk. I'm talking about Pansy Division, this gay punk rock band founded in San Francisco. They changed the punk world forever in the 90s and helped to create a whole new genre of music called queercore.
Unapologetically queer, often crude, basic rock and roll that was pretty in your face.
This week, we check in with lead singer and founding member of Pansy Division, John Ginoli, on Out in the Bay.
I don't like macho, put it away. Doesn't appeal to me, straight or gay. But I know a boy who catches my eye. He don't act tough, why should he try? He's a femme in a black leather jacket. He's a gem in a black leather jacket. He's a femme in a black leather jacket. And I want to take him home with me. With his long, long hair and pouty lips. In a black leather jacket, and I wanna take him home with me. He looks as good in a skirt as he does in jeans. He is a most notorious queen. His personality, I'm not impressed, but I can't wait to get him undressed. He's a femme in a black leather jacket. He's a gem in a black leather jacket. He's a femme in a black leather jacket, and I wanna take him home with me. He's a femme in a black leather jacket. He's a gem in a black leather jacket. He's a femme in a black leather jacket, and I'm gonna take him home with me.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beal. That was the gay punk band Pansy Division with their first single, Femme in a Black Leather Jacket, from their 1991 album, Undressed. My guest is John Ginoli, the founder and lead singer of Pansy Division. John now lives in San Francisco, but grew up in Peoria, Illinois.
I got into music when I was five, when I fell in love with the music coming out of my parents' AM radio, and that was 1965. Took me a long time to get around to making my own, but it's a lifelong obsession.
After college, John stuck around Illinois for a bit and played in a band, and eventually that ran its course.
So I came to California, but I moved to Los Angeles first. I was there less than a year before I came to San Francisco, and I've been here now since 89. When I got here, there was a upsurge of activism and activity. Now there's all these people gathering in ACT UP who are trying to push the envelope and be active and get some results, which they did slowly. It was easy to get an apartment, and my rent was $325 a month at 21st and Guerrero on Liberty Hill with a view of the bay. That was what you could get moving here 30 years ago. Obviously, that has changed. One reason I wanted to come to California and to San Francisco was because, from the Midwestern perspective, it seemed like California was leading the country in so many ways. California had better laws and more protections for gay people. So I was really happy to come here. And the promise of coming here to have a more openly gay life, which is really what I wanted, that's way tougher now unless you have the means for it. And so California has always been a leader. It led the nation in certain kinds of political activism. Now, San Francisco in particular is leading the country in income inequality. That's nothing to be proud of, but it's just the circumstances we have. It's much harder to be a creative person trying to create something and have the time to do it when you're living in a place that costs as much as it does here. And, you know, also comparing it to 1989 when I moved here, the country has gotten so much better in so many ways on gay issues that it's not as essential to have to come here to live that kind of life now. But it seemed like there was something special and magical and more forward-looking or forward-thinking about San Francisco and California than anywhere else I could think of.
Talk to me about the founding of Pansy Division. I'm curious, like, the band doesn't happen without San Francisco, does it?
No, I had the idea for Pansy Division when I still lived in Illinois, but it seemed completely far-fetched, especially the idea of actually having an audience that would be receptive to it. Being a member of ACT UP and going to the weekly meetings and going to protests, one of the things I learned was that if activists stake out a position that is to the left or further extreme or pushier than a mainstream politician would take, that pushing the envelope creates space for somebody like a politician to kind of fill in the gap. Like, here, let's push further out so you don't have to be the person who is first to claim these positions.
It moves the line.
And it makes it so you can see that there is a consensus or a groundswell about these kinds of issues. And, you know, a politician will want to do something, but a politician doesn't want to stick their neck out. So ACT UP stuck their necks out, and I was amazed how much politicians would follow us. I had reached a point where I thought, oh, you can sing about just about anything in music, in pop music, rock music, rap music, hip hop, but you couldn't sing about being gay. That was the last taboo area.
Unless it was in a derogatory way.
Right. So if you cross that line, it's going to kill your career. And there were people that you'd heard rumors about being gay in the 80s, musicians. But the only ones who were out were people who were doing dance music that really got heard in gay clubs. I was a rock fan growing up. I wanted to play rock music. And I thought, people that I think are gay in rock music are very coy about it, or they just plain deny it. But I had this idea of something I wanted to see and hear, and didn't seem like anybody else was doing it. So I decided to write some songs. And I thought, I'm going to be as blunt and unapologetic as the protesters in ACT UP. It's like, I want to demand something from rock music, from pop music, that wasn't there. Freddie Mercury is this gay icon now. He did not come out during his life. And he died of AIDS in 91, right when we were starting Pansy Division. So I put an ad in the SF Weekly and the Bay Guardian, and I found Chris Freeman, who has been Pansy Division's bass player from the beginning. He is the first person who answered the ad, and he had been looking for a band like this himself. So we had both been looking for the same thing, but I'd taken the step to try to form one. So he and I got together, and that was a really good pairing.
We heard the first single, Femme in a Black Leather Jacket, at the top of the show, but I wonder if you can recall the first song that you guys actually recorded.
It was that. Femme in a Black Leather Jacket was back in the days of ACT UP. A lot of the ACT UP crew would wear black leather jackets with these ACT UP stickers all over them that were very colorful and flamboyant and unapologetic. And also, I love long-haired guys. with a very unpopular taste among gay men, I thought, ooh, there are these really hot, long-haired guys around the ACT UP circle who would wear these black leather jackets and had long hair. And I'm like, that's what I want. that's what I want to sing about. So that's really what inspired the first song. Though it's not a totally positive portrayal. But, you know, it was about sexual desire, and I wanted to sing about sex in a way that I thought pop songs didn't. They're sexual, but they're always singing about love. And I'm romantic, I'm into love, but I also wanted to sing about sex because I felt like that was the part that had been left out, especially in the time of AIDS where condom use was necessary. It's like, I wanted to put out a real pro-sex message in defiance of politicians like Jesse Helms, United States senators using homosexuality as a wedge issue. And I thought, well, what can we do but be ourselves and be ourselves in the most blatant and blunt way? But with humor. I wanted to do it with humor. I really wanted to do something that was joyous in a time that was grim. And over the years, our tone has changed, but we always have that humor element, which sometimes causes people to dismiss us or diminish us, but which I think is really a strength.
You have this look of pride on your face when you share these stories. And as I watch archival tape of you performing, I mean, you really just have this IDGAF attitude all the way through your career. I wonder, did that come naturally? Did you actually have any fear in these days, or have you always just kind of not cared what anyone thought about you?
I did have fear. I mean, homophobia is a real thing. As soon as our first album came out, which was in 93, we started playing live shows, especially outside of San Francisco. And on that first national tour, Chris, the bass player, he had a partner at the time, and he would make a point to call him every day just to check in and tell him that we were okay. That was because, you know, we were worried. We did go to South Carolina on that first tour. We went to Georgia. We went to Texas. So, you know, we had fears of our own, but we thought, there's this right-wing BS thing about freedom in this country that has to do with guns. And for me, freedom was being able to say and do what you want. I mean, we get the freedom idea drummed into us, but then if you actually try to use it, there's pushback. So my thought with starting the band was, we've got freedom of speech, let's use it. And let's use it to good ends. We have something that we can achieve doing this, that we're a small part of a larger thing that was really important to us. The success of the first record, which really was the template, it's like, you know, kind of like, what can we get away with? Lent itself to, you know, realizing for the second album, you know, we don't have limitations. We can sing about whatever we want and have people enjoy it. So we let the possibilities engulf us. We just thought, sure, let's sing about that. Let's sing about that.
What song from that album would you say is the best example of Deflowered's message?
That is tough.
Choose your children for me, John.
Your favorite child, especially one that you can play on the radio, because there are a lot of these songs that our ideas include uncensored language. But one you can play is Reciprocate. And I think that even though we're a gay band singing about gay themes, that is a topic that people can relate to, whatever their orientation is.
If you love Bay Area rock, you are going to love the story that's coming up after Reciprocate. Pansy Division is on Out in the Bay.
When I have you on my mind, I'm always lying on my back. But when we get together, I'm unhappy in the sack. 'Cause all my desires and wild anticipation wilt away in continual frustration. 'Cause if you want to be serviced with a smile, you gotta reciprocate more than every once in a while. 'Cause all work and no joy means I'll be looking for another boy. All work and no joy means I'll be going down on a different boy. Reciprocate, reciprocate. Unless you'd rather go home and masturbate. Reciprocate, reciprocate.
That's Pansy Division with Reciprocate on Out in the Bay Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beal. My guest is one of the founders of Pansy Division, lead singer John Ginoli. And one afternoon in 1994, after that second album came out, John was on BART.
I'm going over to Berkeley to visit Lookout Records, our label, a famous, maybe about to be famous, punk rock drummer gets on the train with us, who I have never seen or met, but the people from the label certainly had.
That drummer would open a door for Pansy Division that would put the band on the national stage. That story in just a second. Out in the Bay receives support from Project Open Hand, whose medically tailored food helps Bay Area residents recover from illness, get stronger, and lead healthier lives. Project Open Hand serves people with HIV and AIDS, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and other critical illnesses. Learn more at openhand.org. This is Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beal. My guest is one of the founders of Pansy Division, lead singer John Ginoli. In 1994, after their second album came out, John was on a BART train when he met a soon-to-be famous punk rock drummer.
The drummer we ran into on BART turns out to be Trey, the drummer for Green Day, who I'd heard. They'd had a couple albums out, but I had not seen them. They were from Oakland, but met the drummer a week later. He calls me up and said, hey, do you want to open for Green Day this summer?
They were about to explode at this point, right? This is like right as Dookie's coming out, Basket Case, When I Come Around, some of their biggest hits ever are about to drop.
By the time we got on tour with them that July, their first video had hit MTV, and they were suddenly getting huge. And we were suddenly playing in front of an audience that was not gay, that was mostly teenagers. And suddenly, here we are, our unapologetic, openly gay songs filled with four-letter words. Kids were not what we expected to be playing to when we started our band. But once confronted with that reality, we didn't change a thing, because sex education in this country and frank talk about sex and sexuality, it just wasn't there. And in certain parts of the country, it still isn't.
And Green Day really advocated for you to be able to do that too, didn't they?
They wanted to show the world their roots and their values. And, you know, by having us on tour and playing in front of their audiences, that was a statement. And they would come on during the show and usually say something about us. And if the reaction hadn't been very good, they would stick up for us and say, what's wrong with you people? Pansy Division's a great band. And Billy Joe used to say they are the future of rock and roll. I wish that was true, but, you know, it did really help get a future for us, because it, I would say that, so we did this Green Day tour in the summer. They went to Europe, came back, and by then they were playing arenas, and we did arenas with them. And that was never on the Pansy Division agenda, but you could always look out into the audience in these big places. And I tell you, it was fascinating, because from, you know, what we could see, there'd be a group of people over here who were just hating it, and other people over here who were loving it. But by then, our audience was probably 90% straight. And over the years, we've kept a lot of those Green Day fans, but I think the ratio of gay to straight fans is pretty much evened out. You know, we were very active through the 90s. And since then, it really has been a hobby band where we get together and do a tour every once in a while, and get together and make a record every once in a while. And, you know, I think it's great that we've been able to maintain it, because some bands just burn out and then there's no salvaging it. Our level of popularity was manageable. Like, we never got to be huge and face those kinds of pressures. So we're always in charge of our own records. We weren't facing pressure to do things a different way.
Sure.
We've never had a manager. So, you know, there's a DIY ethic that we have maintained that has worked well for a band at our level. But having that brief period where we got all that coverage and had hundreds of thousands of people seeing us at shows, that was an incredible boon for the band, and probably why we're still here.
Pansy Division is back on the road this summer after 2 years off. Last night, you were at the Alibi in Palm Springs, tonight at Zebulon in L.A., and then this weekend, you're in Oakland at the 2022 Mosswood Meltdown at Mosswood Park. It's got to feel good to get back on the road, but what are you reflecting on most as you head back out and start putting your work back out into the world?
I was talking to Chris about this the other day. It's like we've got a legacy now, and there are people who are interested in us who don't realize that we're still together. So it's good to resurface. And what's thrilling about the show in Oakland, I love the festival. It's a garage rock stuff. And Bikini Kill are the headliners, the best known band out of Riot Girl. Riot Girl is contemporaneous with Queercore in the early 90s. And I love the Riot Girl bands. And Bikini Kill are really influential. And we played with them 30 years ago in Berkeley at Gilman Street, the All Ages Club. And now we're playing with them again 30 years later. I think it'll be really interesting for us to be on the same stage together again so many years later.
That's Rebel Girl from Bikini Kill, one of the acts joining Pansy Division on stage Sunday, July 3rd at Mosswood Meltdown in Oakland. You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beale. My guest is Pansy Division's John Ginoli. On your website, it says that Pansy Division has played 970 plus shows and that the goal is 1,000.
Yeah.
What happens after 1,000?
It could be the end. It might not. I hope we get there. It's just a number, but it's a goal. It's good to have goals.
What's Pansy Division's legacy as you see it?
When rock and roll was seen as a homophobic art form, we changed that. By being as out as we were, people who have never heard of us have benefited from our actions. So I hope that people will recognize us for having broken down a door that to us seemed closed. And we thought, well, if no one else is going to walk through this door, then we will.
Well, I just want to say thanks on behalf of music fans everywhere for representing our experience in music and on stage, because it wasn't being done before you did it. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for joining me this week on Out in the Bay.
Thank you for having me.
Trying to deny it. It's no bogus journey. It's their heart's true yearning. It's time for Bill and Ted's homosexual adventure to begin. In the garage, they're practicing their guitar solos. But in the bedroom, they're practicing on one another. School was such a pain. You know what's on their minds. Hey, Duke 69. It's no bogus journey. It's their heart's true yearning. It's time for Bill and Ted's homosexual adventure to begin. They might seem kind of dumb, but they're not rubes. They got each other by the pubes, squeezing on one another's tubes. One's dark and one is blonde. Day and night they get it on. They got condoms in their pockets, plug into each other's sockets. They learn from Socrates and other ancient Greeks the art of sexual techniques. They may not be too bright, but they know what they like. A love affair most triumphant. It's no bogus journey. It's a boner journey. It's time for Bill and Ted's homosexual adventure.
That was Bill and Ted's Homosexual Adventure by Pansy Division, who you can see this weekend, Sunday, July 3rd, at Mosswood Meltdown in Oakland. Out in the Bay is supported in part by Project Open Hand, providing 2,500 life-saving meals and 200 bags of groceries daily to sustain people experiencing illness, social isolation, or the health challenges of aging. Learn more at openhand.org. Project Open Hand, meals with love. You can catch up on past episodes of Out in the Bay, get in touch, and sign up for our email newsletter. You can also make a donation. All of that at outinthebay.org. Your donations help us keep bringing queer air to your ears. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit independent production. We rely on donations from listeners like you to keep the show going. You can make a donation at outinthebay.org. Thanks to Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Silicon Valley and Cornelia Enders of San Francisco for your generous support. Thanks also to KALW 91.7 FM and San Francisco Public Press's radio station KSFP 102.5 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area for broadcasting Out in the Bay each week. If you have an idea for an episode of Out in the Bay, send it to outinthebay@yahoo.com. Our executive producer is Eric Jansen. This episode was produced by me and Richard Ibarra. Our theme music is by Holly Mead. I'm Christopher Beal at RealChrisJBeal on social media, and we'll see you next week out in the Bay. Thank you.